Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Once again, everybody, we have stepped to the line of scrimmage once again with this latest edition of Gun on One, the podcast. It is powered by Patterson Square Garden. I'm Derek Gunn. Well, finally, the Eagles hit their bye for some much-needed rest and rehab, and the team is still relevant. I have this team projected as a 6 or 7 win team. They have 6 wins, and they're still relevant in the so-called playoff hunt. So for this particular show, I'm bringing in a guy I've had a lot of respect for a lot of years. I've known for a long time. I love his work. He is Mike Garofalo from the NFL Network. Man, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, D-Gun. Thank you very much. And you know the respect goes back the other way as well, man. Good to chop it up with you here. And let's get into it.
All right, brother. Well, as you just heard me say, Eagles are 6-7, 2.5 behind Dallas in the division, 4 games to play. They are currently the number 8 seed. Can they do it? Can this team that many projected to win 6 or 7 games somehow find a way to slip into the back door of the playoffs?
There's no question. I mean, the schedule's lining up this way, and I know that they're kicking themselves for that Giants loss. Not just because, like, you know, We in the media will look at a schedule and say, hey, they got 5 games coming up and they're all winnable, so they're going to go 5-0. Well, it's not how it works, certainly in this league. And it's less about, as I have found this over the year, it's less about how it looks on paper. It's more about the timing, right? So you catch a team like the Jets coming off a win in Houston. It was a good spot for the Eagles. They're coming off a loss. Jets are coming off a win on the road. Still got a lot of work to do. So it was like, it was a great spot. And you know, I think that factored a little bit into, you know, let's just let Jalen chill. Let's not push this. We believe in Gardner. We can win this game. I just threw out the cautionary tale, and then I'm going to say, look at the schedule, and it does line up for them to take care of what they need to take care of. So, yeah, I think they can. And you know, I had them probably around where you were, 6 wins, something like that. You know, and I think I'm probably kicking myself for a few things. You know, we did know coming in, they were strong up front on both sides of the ball, and that still wins you games in the NFL, and it forever will win you games in the NFL. And that's how they've done it. And I give Nick Sirianni, you know, credit for midstream adjusting and getting this team to this point. So yeah, I think they're very much in it. And you know, a postseason game, albeit on the road, would not be a surprise to me.
What has stood out the most to you about this team's ability just to even stay in playoff conversation?
Probably, you know, I go back to early in the season, there was a little unrest, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, right? I had heard such high praise about Jonathan Gannon. I remember back in training camp, he was holding his session with the media, and Howie Roseman walked kind of right by me, and he points to him, he says, this guy, stud. And he just kept on walking. And then early in the season, it was like, you know, these guys weren't happy with how they were being used. Fletcher Cox made no secret about it. The way it was explained to me, and you know, I've played a little bit of ball and I've covered it, but way it was explained to me was Gannon, instead of like, let's put our 11 guys in best position to cover and to attack as a whole, was more trying to isolate certain guys and highlight certain guys. And this play is for you. And this design is for you. And I don't know how much that's changed, but I know that that's what they were frustrated about. You know, if you weren't the guy that was highlighted, and even if you were, and it just wasn't working as designed, they're saying, why are we doing this? This is more of an offensive mindset that he was trying to take to the defense. Long story short, I thought, oh boy, this doesn't sound great. but for them to make the adjustments and to stay on the same page and get on the same page, I should say, I think that's because this could have gone seven different ways and still got them in contention. And I don't know, it feels kind of weird. Like, we know how demanding this town is for us to sit here and say, you know, they're on the what are they, 6-7? They're on the wrong side of, yeah, they're on the wrong side of 500. But we're saying, hey, look how good things have gone. But, you know, that's the fact of the matter, man.
You know this market as well as I do. You know the fan base as well as I do. Do you think the fan base has been too critical of Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts, the way this team was put together?
The way they were put together or kind of how they've been coached this year? I mean, what's the...
All of the above. It's all encompassed. Well, the way they were coached, how they were put together.
But I do want to isolate it because I thought people were being too critical of Nick Sirianni and the coaching staff early in the season.
Okay.
Particularly with the run the ball. Because we know that it gets oversimplified. That being said, he kind of listened to it. He kind of leaned into it, right? Like, yeah. What are you doing? Like, and I, you know, in talking to defensive coaches that have faced these guys, both early in the season and later as we've gotten into it, they've kind of said, you know, look, they seem like they were a bit in denial about who they were and what they had to be early in the season. And it was probably the opener, how well things went there, that maybe had them thinking that they were a different kind of offensive team, but now they've leaned into it. And, yeah, I would say people were being too hard on them, except what they were saying. Nick Sirianni said, you know what, that's a good idea. I'm going to do it, you know, and made the adjustments. So I don't think they've been too hard in that regard. I do think they've been too hard when you look at the roster makeup that you're talking about and the plan. I think it's really, you know, and Howie Roseman has taken a ton of heat over the last couple of years. Some of it, you know, absolutely deserved.
Yep.
You know, and I look at this year, I think he's done a really nice job of keeping this team competitive, sticking by guys who, cause you could say, hey, we're rebuilding, we're tearing this down. We're going Miami Dolphins the last couple of years. Who else did? The Cleveland Browns have done it within the last decade, probably a couple of times. And full tear down. We don't care if we win games. We're just going to stockpile. The Houston Texans are doing it right now. We're going to stockpile picks going forward. He knows that wouldn't have flown in this market. I think he also realizes you need to do right by guys who were cornerstone pieces of this team that won a title a couple of years ago. And to do all that and keep them competitive right now, I think it was a really nice job of what he's done. Now, listen, 3 first round picks sounds great. Go check with the Raiders. They didn't hit on them. Go check with Miami. They haven't hit on theirs. So going forward, you know, he's still got to deliver. But I think he's done a nice job of balancing everything he's trying to accomplish right now. It's not easy to do.
What did you think of Gardner Minshew mania this past Sunday?
I thought it was, I covered the game and it's, as I said, I put it on Instagram, as I said in there, I don't have a rooting interest. I mean, people all the time, I covered the Giants for 9 years and they were like, how'd you cover the Giants when you grew up an Eagles fan? I said, I covered the Eagles before that. You know how it is. You're not a fan when that happens. I mean, you're too close. You see how the sausage gets made and you know, it's, and I don't mean like for good and bad. I mean, I went up and covered the Giants, like I said, for 9 years and
sure.
I was like, wow, these guys, there's some really awesome guys in this locker room that I got to know. And it's like, well, if I was still an Eagles fan, how would I sit there and say, well, I want the Giants to do bad when I know these guys personally and I, you know, they respect me. I respect them. Yeah. Anyway, the long way of me saying, I did enjoy covering a guy who from the moment he showed up in that jacket and the glasses and wasn't doing it for show either. No, right. No. Like we do the walk in, we show them on NFL Network and you know, who's trying to really look like they're hot stuff and who's going the other way? Who wants to be oh, hey, it's just lunch pail guy going to work, right? Gardner Minshew showing up the way he did, he knew it was going to get attention, but didn't feel like he did it for attention. Just felt like genuinely he was a kid having fun, and he saw that guy that he sees. I saw the guy that he went up and jumped and slapped five with, and he looked like Gardner. He had a mustache with the head thing on, the head sleeve, whatever it is. And I said, oh, this guy came dressed as Gardner Minshew. Apparently that's his look. And he's got a Jim McMahon jersey on for most games, and Gardner has seen him. And, you know, so to see him celebrate with that guy, and then the video of him afterwards celebrating with his dad, it's cool. It's cool. You know, it's, there's a lot of serious things that we do, but it's still a game. And, you know, I appreciated that.
I'm glad you brought up the video after the game, man. You and I both, we've covered this game a long time. And I don't get emotional, but I almost got emotional watching that video. Yeah. I mean, the bond between him and his father. And you can tell, man, this is a guy, he's not consumed by being an NFL player. He's just happy to be there and happy to be given an opportunity and share that moment with his dad, man. And it's been quite a while since I've seen any kind of video close to something like that. Kind of got me right here, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, John Clark, who shot that, did a great job grabbing that outside the buses, and it was a great scene. And there were very little words. I mean, it was all just the emotion, the actions, and how excited he was. Look, he went through some things in Jacksonville. I was talking to somebody yesterday that was part of that previous regime, and they said, you know, Doug Marrone really never took a liking to Gardner Minshew, and we couldn't figure out why. And that person thinks that Marrone kind of let Trent Baalke know his thoughts on the matter, and it feels like it soured him for the following, which they had they were going to take Trevor Lawrence. He had no future in Jacksonville. But I think that there's probably a disappointment. Any proud player, you know, he was asked after the game, Gardner, do you want to be the starter? I mean, yeah, he wants to be. And he said, any player who's, you know, wants to be the starter. So I think for him, not rubbing it in anybody's face, but I'm sure there's a part of him that was upset that he got bounced from Jacksonville the way he did, the way he was treated on the back end. Yeah. And you know, I think he understands, like, they had the number one pick. You got to take Trevor Lawrence. But that being said, we shouldn't have been in position to have the number one pick, because I should have been in a position to be more successful. And I think that's a huge part of the emotion that you saw on Sunday that he wouldn't say. But it was a big part of it, I think.
You know how we love a good quarterback controversy in Philadelphia, and sure enough, after that game, as I knew it was going to happen, all across social media platforms, radio formats, people are talking about who do you go with from this point on. In your mind, should we even be talking about the possibility of a quarterback controversy?
No, I'm already to the point of, okay, how's this going to affect Jalen? Just because of how things went with Carson Wentz, who I've been supportive of, who I think is a terrific quarterback, who I think is the kind of guy you want as your franchise quarterback in a lot of ways, except for the way that this kind of stuff affected him. It's just, as much as he tried to block it out, it seeped in and it affected him. I think Jalen Hurts is a different makeup. I do. He already dealt with it. I mean, Deshaun Watson wasn't here, but we all knew that they were nosing around there. And he was being asked about it. So for him to have already kind of dealt with this one time around and come out of it stronger or as strong as he was before, I think it's a pretty good indication that he can handle it going forward. But we'll see. I mean, you never know till this kind of stuff. It's one thing to, you know, like I said, he did deal with it, but Watson wasn't here. Now he's going to see Minshew every day. I mean, that's what really messed with Wentz two times, when Foles was there and when Jalen Hurts was there. So we'll see. I think it'll be talked about and it'll be amplified for 2 weeks. But if it's up to you, Jalen, if you're listening, I know you're not, because, you know, I think you really do tune things out. Hang in there. He's a good young kid. I want to see him get a fair shake.
Think about what you were like when you were 23 years old. Now, here's a young man, 23 years of age, on a huge stage in one of the most critical markets in the NFL. He's had to listen to rumors about another quarterback. He comes out of the gate. He's the Pied Piper of Philadelphia. Fans love him. All of a sudden, it starts to go up and down like that proverbial roller coaster. That's a lot of weight for a 23-year-old to carry on his shoulders. People can say, well, he's a high-paid athlete, but he's still human. You know, and that's a lot of weight. And I don't know what he's like away from the cameras, but I tell you what, when he steps in front of the cameras, I think he is the consummate poker player. You don't know what he's thinking. His demeanor never changes, and he's always positive, always the same.
I've made mistakes. I'm 41. I make mistakes on a daily basis. There were some mistakes that I made professionally and otherwise. I mean, I would say about the time that I was 25, 26, when I really felt like, okay, I'm starting to grow up. And part of that is I met my wife when I was 26 and she slapped me around a little bit and tightened me up.
I know that feeling.
She's still doing. If you said to me, like, when did you become an adult? I would say around 25, 26. Right. And these guys now they have, well, let me go back. I mean, I always say that, and then I say, like, I'm the one that I feel like grew up with good parenting, a really good environment, all these. And a lot of these guys were not as fortunate to have that. And it's like, okay, so we're asking way more of them than was asked of me.
Sure.
Anyway, the other thing is, though, that they're thrust into situations when they're 18, 19, 20 that I didn't see. So that kind of maybe evens out a little bit. But the long and short of it is, I do look back at these guys and say, how are we asking them to deal with all this at an age where, you know, most of us were not able to deal with it? So, I think he's won people over. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
I a lot of people over. I go back to last year. I remember talking to player agents who were saying when he took over, and not even defending Wentz, just giving me my guy said, oh, when this guy takes over, it's not going to work out. And, you know, our guys, our receivers and tight ends are going to be upset. And I remember seeing during a game last year, one of those players celebrating with Hurts, and it was a genuine celebration of, yeah, all right, man. Oh, yeah. And I think I even took a video and sent it to an agent. And I was like, I thought you said, he's like, yeah, I don't know, maybe apparently the guy's winning them over. And I was like, okay. And that carried through to this year. And I think, you know, Ian Rappaport, two, three weeks ago, he had the report, you know, and it was kind of, I love to tell Ian this, like, oh, you're going to get so much attention when it's like, yeah, everybody in Philly's kind of been talking about it. He's starting to play his way into being the franchise quarterback. And that was the day, the Eagles game, he had his worst game. I said, Ian, you broke Jalen. What are you doing? People in Philly are going to kill you. I do think there's a lot of truth in that. This team made the Wentz trade because they realized it was not going to work out anymore, and then said, all right, let's start to compile this draft pick compensation next year, because we're either going to need it to trade for a quarterback or to draft a quarterback. And Jalen kind of raised his hand throughout the course of this year and was like, hey, I'm here. Why don't you use those picks on other positions across the roster? So we'll see. I still think right now it's like it's a tough call if I'm Howie, because he's played really well. Has he done enough to show you, like, no matter what adjustments are made, I'm going to continue to evolve? We'll see, and we'll have that conversation as we get into January, February, March, leading up to the drafting.
You know, the funny thing is, people can keep screaming about the Eagles looking for a quarterback of the future all they want, but the birds are kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, the rumors out there, hey, can you get Aaron Rodgers? Can you get Russell Wilson? First of all, I don't think either one of those quarterbacks are coming to Philadelphia in its current situation. They've won Super Bowls. They want to put themselves in a position at this stage of their careers to possibly win another Super Bowl sooner rather than later. Then if the rumors we hear are true, or the evaluations that 2022 is not a great year to draft a quarterback, you know, we may be looking at Jalen Hurts and Gardner Minshew again in 2022. And I think people need to possibly get ready for that. Do you agree or disagree?
I do. Yeah. And part of it is how he's going to play down the stretch here, he being Hurts. But I think that there's a, you know, and I also, I think these quarterbacks in the draft probably wind up going higher than we think, just because that's the way it happens and teams need him. And, you know, I don't think you'll see – what was the 1 year there wasn't a quarterback taken until – gosh, it was in the teens. 2013. It was the Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Deion Jordan draft, unless I'm confusing my years. Anyway, long story short. I think you're going to see some quarterbacks in the mix there. You know, Rodgers, I think, winds up in Denver. It's just my hunch right there. And, you know, there are places Washington's going to potentially need something, although Heineke's kind of pulling a Hurts down there right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think at some point, if you're Howie, you say, hey, I had a certain thing in mind with regard to how these draft picks are going to be used. But this guy's buying time, you know. I believe that you may be there. Now the question is, I said this when Ian and I talked about this with regard to his story. You know, how much do you want to lean into it, right? Do you want to? And it's different. I'm going to say this, and I know I shouldn't, and I know people might get pissed, but do you want to become the Baltimore Ravens, right? Like, do you want to say we really got to scheme stuff? Because who was talking the other day? Was it the Giants game or the Jets game? One of the defenders was talking afterward about how they're not like Baltimore, but it was kind of like that, where there's really nothing, not a whole lot that you can do. Or maybe it was a Saints game even. But basically saying, like, their offense isn't designed with, like, stuff that's schemed for featuring the quarterback. It's just, we're going to run these zone read looks. And because of him, it opens up stuff for the running back because we have to respect the quarterback. Or if he pulls it, hey, even though we've got a guy devoted to him, he's going to beat that guy, and now he's off and running. So, you know, do you want to now go into the offseason and say, all right, Jalen Hurts is our guy. We're going to do even more of the stuff focused around his legs. Now we're going to scheme toward that. That's another question that they're going to have to answer, even beyond sticking with him for the foreseeable future.
Do you think there's a possibility moving forward for the remainder of this season that Sirianni could utilize both Hurts and Minshew's talents in game situations, similar to what New Orleans did with Drew Brees and Taysom Hill?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Only because if it was flipped, right? And Jalen can come in and be that, which they sort of envisioned last year.
Yeah, and be that Taysom Hill.
Yeah, to be, you know, because it's very rare that you go the other way and say, let's bring in Minshew, a guy who's more of a pocket passer. I wouldn't think so. And the other thing is, just with regard to what we talked about earlier, you know, the market and, you know, if Minshew comes in, he's in for five plays and he throws four completions and one of them's a touchdown, another one's a long throw. It's just creating a problem for your quarterback that I wouldn't create. So, I mean, we'll see. My hunch is no.
Okay. You cover this team a lot. And I got to ask you this. To what degree do you think Sirianni has improved this season as a coach?
Oh, I think he's improved vastly. And I thought he was a little too honest early in the season. The San Francisco game. It was a San Fran game. It was the Kansas City game, I think, was right after that. Or was it the Dallas game? No, it was the Dallas game. And I got 32 teams in my head, and I got to keep their schedules straight. And I get these moments of, like, I sort of remember this, but I, you know, and obviously I remember more of the Eagles because I spend more time around them, but it's still tough to kind of, I got to file these things in my head.
Right.
But it was the game. He says, I really dragged myself through the mud. I guess it was before, because it was before the Dallas game, because he had an extra day. And he was saying, I had another day to kind of drag myself. And it's like, I don't know what Bob Lang, the Eagles PR guy, said to him afterward, but my don't say that. Don't let him know you're sweating. Exactly. Don't let him see you sweat, you know? So I think he's, but Doug Peterson had a little bit of that in him, definitely more so early on.
Yeah, he had to learn as he went along.
Yeah. But I think at times he went a little too far the other way. You know, I think some people do want to see what Jason Kelce talks about, which is accountability, right? Yeah. So people want to see that, and people want to see you be a human being. There's still but it's like a fine line that you want to walk towards. So, you know, I think he's become more confident in himself. I think he's certainly earned the players' trust as we've gotten throughout the season. So yeah, I think he's improved. When they made the hire, I mean, and the opening press conference didn't help, but when they made the hire, it was kind of like, you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot of depth here. Now there's,
I was right there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's plenty of depth here. And, the guy doesn't drink coffee, which is crazy to me, considering how energetic he is.
Now, you being a Philadelphia native, you cover a lot of Eagles games. Is it hard for you to not be biased? You know, because I know you still bleed Eagles green. When you cover the team, is it hard sometimes?
No, and I even covered the Super Bowl. See, here's what I hold on. You can't. Well, this is an audio podcast, but I'm going to show you, D-Gun. Hold on.
Okay. All right.
So in my office, I have a couple of frame things. And right. This is so my mother bought this is me here, the bald guy. these are my friends. These guys are brothers. This is my brother. This is my cousin. Yeah. And they came with me to Minnesota. And my mother bought this for everybody.
Okay.
Afterward, and it's a Super Bowl champions. It had a place for your ticket, and it had a place for a picture. And the ticket was more vertical than my credential right here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to take it to get it recut so I could fit my credential in here. And I thought to myself, should I be hanging this up? Because I'm not a fan, right? Hanging this up? And I remember thinking to myself, no, this is okay to hang up because the memories of that week are what I remember.
Absolutely.
Right? And here I am with my guys, and they were so excited, and I was happy for them, right? I was happy that they were excited. And truly during the game, I wasn't agonizing, and even when the confetti was going, I didn't feel it as a fan, but I just remember being on the field and seeing my brother. We get tickets every year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we still do, but we COVID has disrupted everything, D-Gun. I'll let you know in a couple of but we get 1 to 2 tickets, depending on the year. And sometimes the location is horrible and sometimes it's good. Well, Minnesota, I guess, because it was a cold location and the demand maybe was lower. It wasn't low, but it was lower. We got like third row tickets.
Wow.
Yeah. And it wasn't third row where it was like obstructed view because they elevate those seats down there. So they were there right kind of where the Philly special happened toward that end zone. And I remember going down the field and just seeing them, and Colleen Wolf's family was there. And a couple other, James Palmer, I think his family was there.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing how excited they were. Yeah. That made it a memorable week. And I don't, and part of me says, well, I miss my fandom because I like to kind of live and die with this stuff. And
sure.
You know, I truly don't. I go back, I tell the story years ago. I was covering a Giants Eagles Sunday night game. I was the Giants beat writer, and the Giants were up 5, and the Eagles had the ball with 2 minutes left. And I was actively rooting against the Eagles because when you're covering a night game for a newspaper, your story needs to be in by the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Eagles scored, I was going to have to rewrite my story and get it in a matter of like, I don't know, 2 minutes. Yep. And it was just going to be chaos. So I was sitting. And by the way, if you're an Eagles fan, you're listening to this and you're mad at me for that. If it was 36-31 the other way, I would have been rooting for the Eagles. Okay. That you root for yourself in this business. So it's not hard, and I do miss being a fan, but the trade-off is great. We got one of the best gigs ever, right?
No question about it. Now, after that game, after that Super Bowl win, obviously euphoria erupted across the nation for Eagles fans. Now, I'm down on the field, and at the conclusion of doing multitudes of interviews, I actually dropped to the ground and did a confetti snow angel. did you? Now I'm from Wisconsin. I'm a diehard Green Bay Packers fan. I bleed green and gold. That's one of the worst kept secrets in this region. People know I'm a Packers fan, but I'm also an Eagles fan. You can't cover this team for more than two decades and not be a fan. And I allowed myself to be a fan for a moment. Did you allow yourself to be a fan and get that confetti snow angel?
I didn't. What I did was I packed up like 2 trash bags worth of confetti because I knew people were going to want it. And let me tell you something. You want the greatest gift in the world for an NFL fan, when their team wins the Super Bowl, bring them some of the confetti from. Oh, my. They are so stoked for that.
I've never understood that because, you know, I had so many people asking me, did you get some confetti? I'm like, dude, it's just paper. What do you want?
No,
but it's Super Bowl confetti. I never even thought about it. I can't believe people wanted that stuff.
That was experience, right? I've covered Super Bowls, and we did it 1 year. Somebody asked for it. I think a Patriots fan asked for it. And I said, okay, yeah, if they win, I'll get it. And that person was stoked. And I said, well, every year I kind of think like, I know the Chiefs, the bar in Philly, Big Charlie Saloon in South Philly. That's the big Chiefs bar. I grabbed it for them and oh my God, they were. So I always think whoever's in the game, do I know fans of that team? So when the Eagles won, I said, yes, I know fans of the Eagles. This is going to be the biggest confetti. I mean, I thought I was going to get stopped. I pulled so much confetti out of there, D-Gun. No, I didn't. I did two times when I covered the Giants. We were on the field. The first time when they upset the Patriots, you know, that one I was kind of caught up in a little bit. And again, it's not a team I grew up, but it's just to be along for that ride. You got swept up in it. So afterward we did our video for the website and I said, well, let's reenact the final play.
Yeah.
The final touchdown. And so I was Plaxico and my columnist, Steve Politti, was Eli. And we had a guy I just pulled over. He cucked because they were throwing a ball on the field. So they were, and then I grabbed the confetti and I kind of threw it up in Steve's face. And so we did it then. So we recreated it in 46. Real quick story on that. 42, right. I picked them to beat the Buccaneers in the wild card round. And then I picked against them every game after that. And I remember Giants fans were killing me for that. And I remember saying to myself, man, I wish I saw this coming because it would have been great to have my eyes open to the fact that this team could go on a run.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought to myself, no, I think it was maybe better to experience. I had this internal conversation with myself and I said, here's my plan. If I ever feel like a team is in this situation again going forward,
right,
I'm going to open my eyes to the possibility that it could happen. And let's see, you know, how it affects my coverage and all this stuff. They beat the Cowboys to get into the playoffs 4 years later.
Yep.
Wait, back up. They beat the Jets in week 16. Victor Cruz, 99-yard touchdown, all this stuff. On Christmas Eve, they beat the Jets to go to 8-7. I think they wound up being 9-7 that year. So to go to 8-7. And I said, and the players said it afterward, and their families did too. We all said it. We're like, this team's going to the Super Bowl. Just could feel it. It was the same feeling as 4 years before. And so that year I picked them every week and I wrote with this notion of like, this team could take off, watch out. And it was cool to do it one way where I didn't see it coming, one way where I did see it coming, and to experience it both ways was cool. And I threw some, that was a long answer to you asking me if I did some confetti.
That's okay. That's all right, man. That's why I love talking to you. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Yeah. I know you have time restraints, but I got to ask you a couple of more questions. First of all, quick look at the NFC East. Dallas controls the division, but are they the best team in the division? Because this Washington team's starting to make some noise.
Washington is really impressing me. They're doing some. They play sound football, right? You're not going to run these guys off the field.
Yeah.
And the quarterback's going to make mistakes, but he's not going to make many. So they're really impressing me with what they're doing. They've had a bunch of long drives lately when they need long drives, which is good because you eat clock. But they're also scoring points at the end of these drives. Mm-hmm. The only caveat to that was the Seahawks game where they had the long drive, but their kicker was hurt. Where they would have kicked the field goal, made it a 2-score game. So they had to go for it. And Logan Thomas just had the ball kind of slip out. Anyway, I consider that a successful scoring drive in my mind. So that's one of the things that they're doing right now that has me really impressed. And the Eagles have two against them. Yeah, they haven't played them yet. They got two against them coming
up.
So those are going to be fascinating games. They are.
Are you covering both of those games?
It's a great question. We kind of learn about this week by week. The first one is in Philly next week. Or not next week, the week after, right?
Week after, right.
And the second one's in Washington. I imagine I'm going to grab at least one of those, if not both of them. So, be excited. And who knows now? We're in the flex time, right? We might get.
That's right.
No. They locked that one in at 1 o'clock.
Okay, 1 o'clock. Good. Because I did not want that to be a night game.
December 19th, 1 o'clock. I'm going to say 99% chance that I'll be there for that one.
I did not want that to be a night game. Thank goodness that didn't happen. Hey, look, in all the years you've been covering the NFL, what is your favorite stadium to cover a game in?
Seattle.
Yeah.
Which is,
I love that place.
Is it not CenturyLink, not Quest?
I don't know what the heck it's called now. These stadiums change every five.
I apologize
10 years.
To the sponsor, but you know what? It keeps changing.
All right.
Just real quick, what I love about that place.
Yep.
And Jerry World, you got to go see in Dallas. Like you got
to. I love that stadium. I know Dallas fans hate it, but I love that stadium.
But I don't because
why?
It's not geared toward the game. right? You got the big screen, you got the dancers on the platforms, you got obstructed seats.
It's like a futuristic movie.
You got to see it, but it's not my favorite because I like everything. In Seattle, everything's geared toward the game experience itself. Go ahead.
Wow. Okay. What's the worst stadium you always hate going to cover a game? And I know you have to be politically correct somewhat because the NFL network is owned by the league.
No, I'll give you it.
I don't want to get you in trouble.
No. We're good. I'm going to answer your question with a question. What worst in what way? I mean, people don't care about us and like what's the best press box
in terms of logistics, in terms of food, locker room access, all of the above.
There's been so many FedEx Field probably.
That place sucks.
Yeah, the locker room is split in half. Oh, which. Good. It's
the
funny because
the press box is in the coffin corner of an end zone.
Press box is in the corner.
You can't see the doggone game.
You're in the middle of nowhere, right? It's just the location is just and so it you know, again, people don't want to hear the media's complaints about the media experience.
No.
But it's more than that. I mean, I had people of Seattle, I had the Seahawks people. They're standing on the sideline. I was talking to them and they're like, "This place is a dump, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, now listen, comparatively, when I first started covering the NFL, you know, what the Vet, Three Rivers Stadium, we had legitimate dumps, right?
Oh, my goodness.
And FedEx Field was the new kid on the block back then, right? So now it's down here, and it's like, okay, if this is the worst of the worst now, we've come a long way in 20 years.
Hey, I can take you back even further to show you how old I am, man. I've covered games since there was Jack Murphy / Qualcomm Stadium.
I covered games there, yeah.
Let me tell you something. I lived in San Diego for a while, and I covered that team. That place was trash. And then the Raiders Stadium. No, the old 49ers Stadium, Candlestick Park. Every time I went into that stadium, I'm holding my breath waiting for an earthquake. I don't know why, but in the back of my mind, I'm waiting for an earthquake. That place was a dump also, man. You couldn't even get a cell phone signal close to the locker room.
Yeah, and Oakland was bad too. We did a New Year's Eve game in Oakland in 2005. And I'm like, this just doesn't fit. And, you know, some people are wistful for the dirt infields, you know, that they used to get out of here. Making a football field. There should be no dirt on a football field. So those stadiums, I'm glad are gone. And, you know, there was a little bit of nostalgia for those days. I Qualcomm had the open air press box because it's just so beautiful.
Yep.
In San Diego, that you can have an open air press box outside.
It's the only thing I liked about it.
And that crowd was great. Those Chargers fans, I felt so bad when the team left San Diego. That was a great, great fan base.
All right, my final question to you. Did you ever think that Mike Garofalo, WIP producer, would ascend to a job description where he is on a national platform now? Was that your ultimate goal?
There's no question. I'm fortunate enough that you know, my wife, when I first met her, I'd come home and watch sports and she'd go, "I don't understand. I don't come home and watch CNBC. I was like, "That's your problem, right? You're supposed to do what you love, right?" Oh, so, man. I was very fortunate from a young age. I knew what I wanted to do. But there were moments along the way where I didn't know how it was going to go. I mean, I remember, specifically, I just graduated college and I was working at IP in my junior and senior year. And maybe it was Don McKee. Somebody was working on the weekend. I remember looking through the glass. We had no calls. It was the middle of the summer. And I had time to think. And I remember thinking like, okay, because that's what I wanted to do growing up. I mean, I did want to, like, you know, sports talk, radio. Sure. And I remember looking, I was like, you know, do I still want to do that? I knew it was in sports and it was in broadcasting. Or, you know, and I said, well, even if I want to do that, right, I still, the people they put on the air were former writers. So I had some conversations and Dick Girardi was awesome. Set me up with, you know, talked to Pat McLoon, who's the editor at the Philly Daily News at the time. Somebody else connected me with Rob Motti. Still with the Associated Press, now down in Tampa, but Philly sports editor for and Rob and I, it was funny because Rob and I, all I knew was that he worked at WIP. So I emailed him and you know, he said, well, come out to Eagles training camp. Let's have a talk. And, you know, and the more we talked, we've realized he went to my high school.
Yeah.
First, he was from my neighborhood. Second, he's from my high school. Third, his brother used to, his brother was friends with my neighbor growing up, and they were older. They were about 10 to 15 years older. My father never had Prism. Well, we had Prism late in the days of Prism, but he wouldn't do the premium channels. I mean, we were behind on cable too. I mean, God loved my dad, but we were, you know, a little frugal in that household. So I would go in their house and watch the playoff games, the big games that were on Prism. And his brother was one of those guys that was hanging out with my neighbor in that house. And so Rob was great, brought me, you know, under his wing, and I got to write for the Associated Press and kind of through all that got recommended for the Newark Star-Ledger job. And it's a long story that my wife has given me the wrap-up signal.
Okay. You know, yeah, I hear you.
You guys aren't even getting – she's giving me the wrap-up signal.
I get that all the time, brother. I know.
Yeah. So I was writing for – and covering the Giants for the Star-Ledger. And they have a Giants Online show that they call – where the writers were on this MSG show. And after my first year, the producer said, hey, we haven't had you on. Would you like to be on? So I went on and I did that. And afterward, I'm walking off the set. He's kind of staring at me. And I'm like, oh, God, did I just blow this? And he goes, you're pretty good at this, right? And I was like,
wow.
Oh, this? I was like, oh, yeah. No. I went to school and I've worked in radio TV. I was like, you should be surprised I can write a sentence in the paper. That's what you should be surprised about. You know what I mean?
Oh, my goodness. Hey, Mike, man, I love you, man. And I thank you for taking the time to stop by for Gun on One. Hopefully I can hit you up again down the road, whether later in the season or in the offseason, as we wait to see what this Eagles team is going to do.
But call my wife first. This way I could be like, well, you scheduled it, not me.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know what? Yeah, send me her email so I can go through her. Troy Vincent tells me the same thing. Call my wife or my assistant first before you call me. So I can't thank you enough. Hey, everybody, don't forget – you know, follow Mike on all of his platforms. And more importantly, listen to his podcast. Great podcast, NFL Total Access, The Locker Room. Mike Garofalo, thank you so much, my brother. Have a great day. And stay safe out there, man. And I'll keep watching me. I love your work. And keep doing what you do, brother.
Thank you. I'd say Merry Christmas, but I'm going to see you before that. So we'll hold off on that for now.
All right, brother. All right. And folks, that's going to wrap up this latest edition of Gun on One, powered by Patterson Square Garden. For Mike Garofalo, I'm Derek Gunn. As I tell you each and every week, hey, stay blessed out there, but more importantly, be a blessing to each and every person you encounter. Until next time, so long, everybody. Gun on One is a production of D-Gun Enterprises in Patterson Square Garden. Alvin Shabazian and Wes Pendleton are the executive producers on behalf of Patterson Square Garden. Lead producer is Derek Gunn. Associate producer is John McNeil. Sound design, mixing, and mastering by Alvin Shabazian. Original music by Weatherman. For more information about the podcast, visit gunonone.com. And please, don't forget to subscribe and give us a positive rating if you're feeling the show. Thank you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.